All right, y'all, welcome back to another episode of Tactical Knockout, the Hardcore Casual MMA Podcast. I'm your host, Hussein. With me, as always, my co-host, Jordan Patrick James.
What's going on?
We're going to cover UFC 289, as rough as it was, and then talk about Marvin Vettori versus Jared Cannonier coming up. Let's do it. All right, so not a great week for the TKO fans. A lot of hungry babies out there.
Wait, we're going ramen noodles today.
Yeah, we're going back to the ramen, unfortunately, you know. We had a couple good picks in there, but, you know, a couple real stinkers. I think overall I was 2-4, so not great. But, you know, we're getting after it. We'll pick it back up. You know, they can't all be winners. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, but, you know, going over it, you know, Nunes, I think, you know, in retrospect, that probably was a better, you know, the better choice. Aldana looked good, but, you know, Nunes is just Nunes. And then who could have predicted Charles Oliveira going out there and putting an absolute beatdown on Beneil Dariush?
Yeah, I mean, he was like getting grappled the first few phases of the fight. And I was like, yeah, this is what I thought it would look like. And then he got up and cracked him with that head kick. And then it was just, you know, when Beneil gets hurt, he tends to throw really aggressively and very wide with his punches. And Oliveira's tight technique was a nightmare matchup in that aspect of the fight. So Oliveira put him away with the TKO. Very well done. Hopefully he gets the title shot after this. I don't see why they wouldn't give it to him. As far as Nunes goes, I thought that she was going to lose because I thought she was going to retire. You know, I feel like a lot of times when these fighters are ready to retire, they might not be all in. But Nunes is the GOAT for a reason. So she went out there and put a stamp on the end of the fight and just really beat Irene post pillar to post. You know, in the first round, Irene landed that right hand that rocked her. And that was her only offense the entire fight, it seemed like. Nunes just kind of steamrolled her after that. And once she starts to pick up that momentum, it's really hard to slow her down, you know?
Yeah. Do you see Pena being all sour grapes the last couple of days about it?
Yeah, she's ridiculous, man. I can't wait for her to lose.
And, like, here's my thing. Like, if she would have just left it at, like, oh, I wish she wouldn't have retired, or I really would have liked the trilogy, or this, that, and the other, I was like, all right, cool. Fair. You know, you got injured. You didn't get your trilogy. You know, you did finish her. You know, that's one of those things that I feel like, you know, a lot of people, because she did get, you know, wrecked in the second fight. But, you know, you still got to give it to her. She finished the GOAT. And, you know, I think Nunes is just trying to mess with her. She knows that, like, it's easy to get under her skin like that. So I think
part of
that is just her trying to, you know, piss off a, you know, easily piss off person and a person that's fun to piss off. But,
yeah.
You know, I guess I can see where she's coming from, but then she kind of lays in way too much in it. Like, oh, I'm the goat. I'm like, now you're pushing it. Now you're making people want to hate you and see you get your face smashed in.
Yeah, I mean, she's 2-2 in her last four. Like, that's not goat-like behavior. You know what I mean?
No, I mean, even that, it's just the way the presentation of it. Like, the goats don't call themselves the goats. People call them the goats. You know what I mean?
That's
When's
true.
The last time you heard GSP be like, I'm the goat?
Never. Facts.
You know, so... I said she could have. I feel like Pena probably could have won some people over with a more cordial, you know, take on that. But
it's not her character, though.
Yeah, it's not a character, man. I feel like that's just who she is.
Yeah,
she's very, very pissed off. But
yeah, she's an easily frazzled fighter. You know, she gets her grapes rustled all the time.
Who you think fills in the spot, and who you think is going to challenge for that bantamweight title? And do you think the division in featherweight's done?
Well, I think for sure they're going to absolve the featherweight division. I mean, there was no fighters there anyway. It was like Norma Dumont and Megan Anderson. Megan Anderson already left. So I think for the bantamweight title picture, I think we're looking at Raquel Pennington versus Juliana Pena. And honestly, I take Raquel in that fight like 5 times out of 5, especially if it's a 5-round fight. I really like Raquel's chances there. Pena's got the tenacity, you know. She's a fighter, you know what I mean? Like, she's a dog fighter. You can't take that away from her. But she doesn't have the complete game. She seemed to have just kind of really believed in herself, and that's what brought her to the win over Amanda. We saw some of Amanda's, like, early career faults come up in that first fight. And then the second fight, she got smoked. So, I mean, it is what it is. I saw an article of Amanda saying that she wanted to retire after losing to Pena in the first fight. like she was ready to retire, but she didn't want to leave her with the belt because she felt like it was a horrible champion to have the division.
And I mean, but here's my thing. I think I remember seeing that interview as well, and she had, or I think I saw the post one where she was talking about, you know, even on Nunez, the way that she kind of like presented that, I was like, that doesn't make you look really good, because she was saying something along the lines of like, oh, she's not that good. She beat me and I just wasn't ready. And I'm like, well, that's part of it, you know?
Yeah,
like,
true.
You got beat. You got finished by someone that you shouldn't have got finished by, but it happened, you know? But like I said, again, I think that's just her trying to get under Pena's skin, just kind of like a parting shot. But hey, dude, she had a great career, man. You know, she had an awesome career. She did enough to be cemented as the GOAT.
Oh, for sure.
I hate that it's going to be the end of, you know, even though it wasn't very well contested, but a featherweight division, you know, I want to see more weights get added, you know, for the female fighters, because not every girl weighs, you know, 135 pounds and less. You know, you got some big girls out there that are ready to throw, but, you know, I guess we're not ready for that advancement yet in mixed martial arts.
Yeah, I mean, the problem is that the talent level at those weight classes are just not there, you know? Like, if you look at the PFL lightweight division, they have, like, two good fighters, and then the rest are just, like, pretty much really big bantamweights that can't cut to 35, you know? And bantamweight itself is not a very strong division, but that being said, they signed, like, five or six champions from around the world in the lead up to this fight, so I think they're starting to try to stack up that women's bantamweight division, which I'm happy to see.
Yeah, I think you'll probably in the next, you know, maybe 5 to 10 years, I think you'll start seeing more weights added, because with the growth, especially in the United States, with the growth of female wrestling, you know, I think it's just a matter of time before you see, you know, girls that are in the 150, 160, 170 weight class, you know, start coming out there and competing. Like, there's a girl still in high school named Kennedy Blades. She's a freestyle wrestler, and she was like a match away from qualifying for the world teams. And she's, I think she's about 76 kilos, about 150, 160, and, you know, long, lanky, you know, obviously a wrestler. If she ever decided to get into it and put time to it, that's a world champion right there, you know?
Yeah. But yeah, let's talk about the rest of the card real quick. There was some other interesting things that happened. For one, every Canadian that fought won.
That would have been the parlay, you know?
Yeah, for real. And I mean, like, some of them were plus 300s, plus 250. So there was a lot of money to be made if you were riding with the countrymen there, which was really cool to see. I don't think I've ever seen a country. I mean, maybe the UFC London card, I think they had a really good streak, but still, I don't think every British fighter won, you know? But yeah, Mike Malott in the main card looked amazing. I think he's a bright prospect in this division in welterweight. He took out Adam Fugit in the second round with a guillotine after he cracked him with a left hand. It was beautiful. It was a great sequence. And the guy seems like he's got the charisma and the well-rounded skill set to really, push it to the next level. I'm excited to see how he develops.
Hey, homie has a pitcher on the thing now. He didn't have a pitcher for the longest time. He had no name, no pitcher, no nothing. Now people know who he is.
He's stepping up, yeah.
He's stepping up. He's moving up in the world.
Dan Ige took out Nate Landwehr in a pretty predictable fight. I put a little tenor on Dan Ige by decision because they had him at like plus 260 by decision. Nate Landwehr is so tough to put away, so that was a good pick there. Ige just looked like a step ahead.
Your boy Curtis didn't get to finish it out.
Yeah, man, that sucks. You know, two fights in a row with two headbutts like that, it really sucks, you know? And that one was even worse than the one in the Gaslam fight. The Gaslam one dropped him, and that should have been like, you know, a timeout. This one put a cut right on his eyelid, and they couldn't continue the fight, unfortunately. And the fight was shaking out pretty good, man. Imabov won the first round, and Curtis seemed to have been winning the second round. He was turning it up on him with the body shots and the pressure. So I was excited to see how that fight was going to play out, but it sucks the way it ended, you know? It is what it is, though.
Speaking of sucks the way it ended, my boy, Kui Ling did not last very long at all.
Oh, yeah, Richie Ling got murked, man. That was rough. And I don't know if you saw the video, like, after he got knocked out, they stand him up, like, in the corner, and he thinks that the fight's about to start. He, like, gets ready and, like, squares up and, like, tries to put his hand out to touch the dude's gloves. It was like, Jesus, man. He was in a whole nother world, man. Eamon Zahabi. Again,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, what a performance by Eamon Zahabi. You know, I never pegged him for a power puncher, but I guess looking at his record, he does have a lot of knockouts. So, I mean, maybe it's on my fault for not classifying him such, you know? But nah, yeah, 1 minute knockout. It's hard to ignore him now. Jasmine Jazzy Duvickius took out Miranda Maverick. Miranda Maverick, very disappointing performance. I don't know what's going on with her, man. I think you know, she came in the UFC really hot and was on like a nice little win streak. She showed all the tools she needed to show. I just don't think she's progressed since then. I think she's kind of stagnated a little bit. Maybe she could benefit from changing camps or something, because she definitely has the skill set and the athleticism to excel in this division. It just doesn't seem that her ins and outs of the game are improving as fast as the rest of the division is, you know. Jasmine put on a great performance, got another victory for the Canadians there. Even out-grappled Miranda in certain exchanges, which I thought was really impressive. You know, Kyle Nelson took out Blake Builder, another Canadian underdog getting it done. It was a good night for the Canadian fans. You know, a lot of positives coming out of that card, and the crowd was incredible, man. Like, I wish when I went to Newark that the crowd was that good. Like, this Canadian crowd was cheering for everybody, going insane when the fight hit the ground, going insane when somebody got hurt. Like, it was a really educated crowd, and it was awesome to see. It really elevates the fights when you get a crowd like that, you know?
Well, man, dude, they're Canadian. They watch hockey, you know, so they got the patience, but then they love the hits, man. And that honestly, at this point, I don't want to see any UFC fights in America anymore, because we are a terrible crowd. Everywhere else, it's like, well, I guess I can't count Puerto Rico, but like everywhere else, it's like they get pumped, fired up, and then when you come in to like an American, you know, stadium, if it's a grapple fest, people go boo, boo.
Yeah, facts. It sucks, man. I mean, it depends on what part of the country, for sure. Like, I remember UFC going to Dallas, and there was a very educated crowd there. The Newark crowd sucked, but the Brooklyn crowd was good. So, I mean, it's kind of hit or miss, you know? What I definitely don't want to see is any events in the Apex anymore, because a bad crowd is better than no crowd, you know what I mean?
I don't mind the Apex so much, honestly. Like, I sometimes don't mind the crowd being taken out of it, you know, because especially if I'm watching it and I'm enjoying the grappling exchange, or I'm looking at the technical aspect of it, yeah. I don't want to hear a bunch of people in the crowd going boo, boo.
Yeah,
boo.
Good point.
I just want to like watch it. Same thing with the commentator. Sometimes I just want to shut it off and watch these dudes throw fists.
Yeah, I hear you. It sucks because you can't turn off the commentary and not hear the impact of the punches, you know?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I would pay $5 to take off the commentary.
Yeah, facts. But yeah, that being said, this next card is at the Apex. It's coming up on this Saturday, obviously. Marvin Vettori versus Jared Cannonier. Do you have a horse in the race in this main event, man? This is a pretty close one.
Yeah, I think Cannonier is going to do it, and I would like to see him win only because I really don't want to see Vettori match up again against Israel Adesanya. I don't think he has a chance in a rematch, so it would be nice to see a little bit more of a fresher matchup. But, you know, with Alex Pereira moving up to 205, I don't see a whole lot of people, you know, really giving Israel a good go. But maybe I'm wrong. You know, maybe it's his time is coming, but he just looks, you know, if he's able to compete in there with Pereira and then also like, you know, finish him, I don't see a whole lot of people that could compete. You know, I feel like the 1 and 2 with them is a huge distance away from like everybody else. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, Whitaker also is right there, you know, beating everybody that he needs to, and should probably get the title shot if he beats Strickland Duplessis. But as far as this matchup goes, I don't think either one of them honestly have anything for Whitaker or Adesanya. Both of their fights with those guys were complete blowouts on Whitaker and Adesanya's side. Cannonier was able to rock Whitaker in their fight, but he was, you know, pretty soundly beat regardless. That being said, for this matchup, it's very interesting. You've got Jared Cannonier, who is very hard to put away and hits really hard, versus Marvin Vettori, who has great volume style and is also very hard to put away. The dude is, you know, built like a cement brick. His head is huge, and I don't think I've ever seen him really get hurt in a fight. Marvin Vettori coming off of a slightly controversial decision win over Roman Dolidze, and Jared Cannonier coming off of what I thought was a clear cut, but regardless, a very close fight with Sean Strickland. So, I mean, Cannonier coming off the 5 rounds, I think he might be a little bit better suited in this fight for the 5-round atmosphere. And the Apex, both of these guys are undefeated. So that's pretty interesting. Somebody's O has to go in the Apex. Honestly, I'm really not sure who to pick in this fight, because Cannonier hits really hard, like I said, but Vettori is impossible to put away. And Vettori has good wrestling, but Cannonier is an awesome defensive grappler and, you know, can really exploit people when they try to employ that grappling style against him. He's very good at taking advantage of their mistakes when it comes to the ground game, and has some devastating ground and pound of his own. But that being said, I don't think I see either one of these guys getting a finish in this fight. They're both tough as nails. I could definitely see this fight going to decision. And as the fight goes on, I think I'm going to favor Jared Cannonier's body language and power shots over Marvin Vettori's, volume and takedown attempts. I think the judges kind of favor the damage more than anything these days. And that's the style that's very well suited for Cannonier. Even if he can't put away Vettori, I can see him landing some big punches, some big leg kicks, body shots, that kind of thing. And if Vettori does get it done, I expect it to look like a grapple fest. I think if he can double jab his way into the clinch against the fence, kill some clock there, that'd be a good path to victory for Marvin Vettori. But I just don't know if he can get it done, honestly.
Yeah, so I agree with you 100%. I think the killer gorilla is going to get it done. My biggest, the biggest thing that's drawing me away from it, maybe wanting to go toward Vettori, is the huge discrepancy in age. You know, 29 and 39. There's a lot of changes that happens to your body in that time. So, but Cannonier doesn't look like he's, you know, slowing down. Black don't crack. So, hey, man, it's true. I mean, you're 39 knocking out people, you know.
They ain't lying.
But, and his only losses came, you know, his last couple losses came from Israel and Robert Whittaker. So, you know, he's obviously pretty tough. You know, he's obviously up there in the upper echelons of it. But, yeah, I think I'll probably go with Cannonier on Moneyline. I don't think I'll try to get too fancy with this one.
Yeah, I just don't really see either of them getting a finish. So I think the decision play is a good bet. It's going to be a good fight, though. I'm excited. Yeah, and like you said, Cannonier's only losses in his last few fights were to Whittaker and Adesanya. And I just checked Vettori's record, and it's the same deal. His only losses in his last like five or six were Whittaker and Adesanya. So both of them have come short at the top, but been able to beat everybody else. So I think this is a great matchmaking example. I think this is a good way to build the card. You know, I really don't know who's going to win, but I do favor Cannonier over five rounds. I think he gets it done, most likely by decision. I think that's how it goes down. But yeah, going down the card, there's a couple other fights on here. There's some showcase matchups, we'll call it, or squash match, really, and some interesting matchups where I think you can get some good underdog value. So going down the card, co-main event, Armand Sarukian, for some reason, is fighting Joaquim Silva. Joaquim Silva, Neto BJJ, has good power in his hands and great jiu-jitsu, but not a lot of cardio and is not very durable, versus Armand Sarukian, who is, in my opinion, probably the best example of a well-rounded mixed martial artist, especially at lightweight. He has every tool of the game. He's fast. He's powerful. He has great grappling. You saw him go toe-to-toe with Islam Makhachev in a lot of great scrambles and grappling exchanges in his UFC debut. And Sarukian really seems to be hitting a stride as far as how mean he is in the octagon. I know it seems kind of weird to say it like that, but he just is fighting with a lot more intention lately. And I think it's going to spell a disaster for Joaquim Silva. They have Sarukian at a -1,000, which I think is fair. But I'm sure you can get value on him by finish, which I definitely see this fight happening, ending in a finish, because, you know, Joaquim Silva has been knocked out in his last couple fights, I believe. Let me check his record. But he's coming off a win, but before that, he got knocked out twice in the early going. So, I don't know. I think Sarukian has the complete skill set. I could see him knocking him out. I could see him submitting him. I could see him just beating him up for three rounds. But I honestly don't think Joaquim Silva is the type that's going to lay down for three rounds. I think he's going to go for it and end up getting chin checked and knocked out in this fight at some point. But yeah, I'm going to go with Sarukian by finish. You have a pick in this one, Jordan?
We have talked about Armand quite a bit on this podcast, and he's always done well for us. So I might end up going him. The only thing that's keeping me away is, you know, that +1,000. So the money line doesn't get too much value in it.
And yeah, not at
just
all.
As you were, yeah. You know, if he plays Silva plays a smart one, you know, I think a victory for him would just be surviving at this point. But mm-hmm. I'm not sure. That one, I have it on a possible round robin play with Armand finishing it.
Yeah. But
that might be on an outside bet. I'm not sure yet.
Yeah, I think that's a good move. I mean, to put the round robin in makes it a bit safer. Going down the card, there's another fight on the main card that's really exciting. I'm very excited to see how it shakes out. Armin Petrosian versus Christian Leroy Duncan, or CLD. This guy, Christian Leroy Duncan, came in the UFC off of the Cage Warriors middleweight championship. He fought Dusko Todorovic and showed some really interesting looks in that fight before Todorovic, broke his knee or tore his ACL on a takedown attempt. That being said, Christian Leroy Duncan seems to have a very well-rounded skill set, albeit untested. I mean, he did defend that Cage Warriors belt, but, he hasn't seen the UFC level competition like that. Disco's not even really near the level of competition that Armin Petrosian's at. But it's the skill set of Duncan that is very interesting. He seems to be super well-rounded. It's a stretch to say that, like, it's a similar style to GSP, but he does have that kind of well-rounded game that if the guy is a grappler, he'll strike with them. If he's a striker, he'll grapple with them. You know what I mean? So he kind of has every tool in his pocket. He's fighting Armin Petrosian, who has a great kickboxing background, very well-measured in his approach, and super patient on the feet. Sometimes that plays against him because he'll end up on the wrong side of some split decisions. But in most cases, it ends up looking like a very clean counterpunching performance from him, where he circles on the outside, lands his leg kicks, lands his jab, and cruises to decision victories, knockouts if they arise. But he's no problem just, beating the guy pillar to post and getting that decision victory. In this fight, the odds have Armin as a slight underdog. So I think I saw him at plus 125, something like that. I like those numbers. I like Armin Petrosian a lot. I think the level of competition is different than what Christian Leroy Duncan has been facing. And I can see Armin winning a decision here. I think he can outlast Duncan through the early goings and, take on the early onslaught and start to win that second and third round on the cards. I'm really excited to see how this shakes out, though, because I think both of these guys have a very bright future in this division. So I'm excited to see how this fight plays out. Do you got a pick here, Jordan?
Not really in this one. I think I'm just going to watch this one and hope I get some good data out of it.
Yeah, I'm excited for this one, man. They got some good fights on this card. Some young up-and-comers, some more established fighters. On that note, let's go down to the main card opener. Nicholas Dalby versus Muslim Salikov. We've talked about Muslim Salikov on this pod before. The king of Kung Fu. Super interesting style. He loves throwing spinning back kicks to the body, to the head. Super measured approach on the feet. But when he finds an opportunity to open up, he does so with incredible tenacity. He's also a good grappler. He can hold people against the fence. He can take people down, but he does love the striking. I mean, he is the king of Kung Fu. So, that's where the striking background comes from, Kung Fu and Sanda. He got knocked out not too long ago against Li Jiang Liang, and then came back against Andre Fialho, who, has been middling in the UFC. But before that Li Jiang Liang fight, he was on a 6-fight win streak. So the dude has had some real success in the UFC. Has only lost against some of the best fighters, and he draws Nicholas Dalby in this fight, who's another kind of veteran in this division. Dalby had two stints in the UFC. Initially was there a few years ago and then left, went to Cage Warriors, got a lot of victories under his belt, and then came back. Dude's got a super grinding style and is impossible to put away, it seems. I don't think he's ever been finished. Let me check his record just to confirm. Yeah, he's never been finished. He's only lost by decision or no contest or a draw. He's super tough, man. I really like Dalby. He's one of those guys that goes to war, and when he starts to bleed, that's when he starts to turn it up. I just don't know if his style is gonna play out well for Salikov. Dalby has a very grappling heavy style. It tends to be a little bit plotting in his approach. And I think somebody with the experience on the feet as Muslim Salikov and the well-rounded skill set, I think Salikov is going to be able to circle around him, be a lot faster, even though they're both on the wrong end of 40. And I think Salikov is going to win this fight. I'm not sure if he'll knock him out because, like I said, Dalby is very hard to put away. But I think he gets it done, man. I think he wins the decision here. They got Dalby at a plus 200, so Salikov's at minus 250, which I feel like is a fair line. I think there is some value there on Dalby just because he works so goddamn hard, so he might be able to grind out a decision victory. But for that to happen, I feel like we have to really you know, write off Salikov as an old fighter. And I'm not ready to do that. You know, I think he still has a couple years left in him. And I think he can get it done against the less technical fighter in Dalby, the more tenacious fighter, but less technical. So, yeah, I'm going with Salikov here.
I might go with Dalby on this one. You know, he started to really show his improvement in the grappling game. And Salikov, you know, he tends to find himself in trouble when he gets to the ground. So I think if Dalby is able to implement more of a grappling-based attack mixed with the strikes and is able to keep that pressure like we're talking about, that kind of, you know, really wrestler mindset kind of pace, I think we can see Dalby come away with a victory in this one.
Yeah, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility, and especially with the price tag that they're giving him at plus 200, I think it's a good bet to throw 15 or 10 on him.
By the way, you're just going to go past Pat Sabatini?
Oh, shit, I didn't even see that he was fighting. Who's he fighting?
You didn't even see that your boy Pat Sabatini was
fighting. Yeah, I fuck with Pat Sabatini, man. I mean, I forgot he got starched in that last fight, dude. And I was riding high on him in that fight. Oh, man, who's he fighting? Lucas Almeida. I don't know this guy. I'm not familiar. Let me check him out. All right. He beat Mike Trezano by knockout in his last fight. Okay. I like Mike Trezano. I think that's a good fight. That's his first fight in the UFC. All right. So this guy is relatively unknown then, Lucas Almeida. I was like, I don't know this guy. Sabatini probably get it done. I don't know, man. It's kind of scary. You know, I think he's a little bit chinny at this stage of his career. And maybe he's cutting too much weight. Maybe he just had a bad weight cut that last camp, or just maybe he's not, you know, didn't have the training ready for that fight. But, you know, the Division I is in his back pocket, the black belt and jiu-jitsu in his back pocket. So dude's a monster on the ground. Tough draw for Lucas Almeida. But, I mean, unless Almeida has some crazy jiu-jitsu background that I'm not familiar with, I'm going to have to go with Pat Sabatini here, you know. I mean, he might not be the younger, hungrier fighter, but he's definitely got the more proven skill set. And looking at this guy's record, he's never been finished.
So what I'm finding out about this Almeida is that he's a classic kind of Muay Thai style, and he's stopped most of his foes via knockout. So, you know, he's got some great striking. You know, he might be unknown, and like you said, with Sabatini being a little bit chinny, this might be a terrible matchup for him. You know, he won his UFC debut. You know, so he's already on that momentum. He could be a high product that they're trying to build up and get over on an established name like Pat Sabatini. I might go with Lucas Almeida on this one. What's the odds on this?
I think they have Sabatini at like minus 200 as well. So it looks like, yeah, he has a few knockouts. He has a few submissions. Most of his wins are by knockout. A lot of them come in the first round.
He's a finisher, man.
Yeah. His last fight against Mike Trezano, his UFC debut, he got the finish in the third round. So, I mean, I guess he does have the cardio to go the full, get the finish late in the fight. Yeah, I don't know. It might be a tough fight for Sabatini.
I think if Sabatini gets it done, it's going to be by decision. Other than that, I think you might see him go to sleep again.
Looking at Homeboy's record, though, a lot of these guys that he's fought were not that good, you know. The only times he fought guys with, like, winning records, or at least, like, you know, like, good records, the fight tends to go a little bit longer. The exception being that his fight with what's it called? Italo Trinidad, who was 10-3. You finish him in the first. But yeah, I don't know, man. It's an interesting matchup. We kind of have an unknown there with Lucas Almeida. So I like Pat Sabatini. He tends to wash out these guys that don't have a complete grappling game. And, you know, I know Mike Trezano. I know his style. And I think maybe sometimes he loves the brawl a little bit too much. So I guess he got caught there in that brawl in the third round. It looked like it was a clean left hook. I'm looking at the video right now. Then he just follows it up with some nasty ground and pound. So, I mean, I don't know, dude. It's a tough fight to call. But I like Pat Sabatini. I'm going to ride with my boy. You know, I think he can come back, bounce back from that loss, and get back on his winning ways. It's a couple fights on the prelims I want to go over. The prelim main event, Ronnie Barcelos versus Miles Johns. This is a very interesting fight for me. Hany Barcelos has the well-rounded skill set. He's Jose Aldo's jiu-jitsu coach, I believe. So he's got the ground game. He's got good striking on the feet. He kind of looks like Jose on the feet. Throws the body jab, the hook to the body, the left leg kick. Excuse me. He's pretty well-rounded there. That being said, He's coming off of a really bad knockout and what I think is his first knockout loss against Umar Nurmagomedov. And I don't know, man, in that fight, he just seemed a little slow. I think the age might be catching up to him. The injuries might be catching up to him. The dude was on like a huge win streak in the division and ended up losing a very close fight to Timur Valiyev and then losing another fight to Victor Henry. So, I mean, I think he might be on the wrong side of 40 in this matchup. I think he might be on his way out. That being said, if he fights the way that he's fought in the past, there's no way that Miles Johns is going to have a shot in there. You know what I mean? Barcelos looks like a world beater when he's on. That being said, I do think that his best years are behind him, and Miles Johns is coming in at a pretty big underdog here. And the dude's got power in his hands, and he fights the whole fight through. You know, he's got a solid jiu-jitsu background as well. Obviously not to the level of Barcelos, but Johns is a pretty solid wrestler, and when it goes to the ground, he's definitely not lost. And where I think he's going to give a lot of trouble to Barcelos in this fight is with the power punching. I can see Barcelos winning a lot of the fight and then getting chinned and getting finished. I don't know if it's going to be early. I don't know if it's going to be late. Johns has some third round knockouts on his record, so he carries that power late in the fight. But yeah, I'm gonna go with the underdog here and take Miles Johns. I don't know if it'll be a breakout performance as much as a washout from Barcelos, but yeah, I think it's good money to be made there at the +200 level for Miles Johns.
I agree. That's exactly who I got. I got him going money line as well. I'm gonna add him into my round robin. I think it's just time. You know, I think that he's got it.
Yeah. I think Barcelos is probably going to hang him up soon. You know, he's 1-3, or I'm sorry, yeah, 1-3 in his last four. A couple of those were decision losses. One I said was very close to Timur Valiyev, but the last one he got knocked out really bad. And, you know, that was only like 5 months ago. So I don't know if his chin is even, you know, recovered well enough. 5 months is pretty decent layoff, but, you know, if he gets touched again by a big power puncher, it might not hold up. One more fight I want to gloss over before we get to the betting slip. That's the fight right before the Barcelos fight. Jimmy Flick versus Alessandro Costa. Alessandro Costa had that loss to Amiro Bazzi, who we saw beat Kai Kara France a couple weeks ago. Costa has the jiu-jitsu. He has good power in his hands. Tends to be a little bit slow on the feet, like foot slow. Doesn't have great footwork, but is a brawler for sure. And when he goes to the ground, he's not lost in any aspect. Jimmy Flick, on the other hand, is a bit of a wild man. Not so much on the feet, but on the ground, he throws up really interesting techniques, flying triangles, head kick into a flying triangle in that one fight. And then he retired, came back off the retirement and looked like he didn't want to be in there. So I kind of worry that he's just fighting for the paycheck at this point in his career. And against somebody that's so dangerous like Alessandro Costa, I don't think that's a good move. I do have Costa in this fight. He's a -250 favorite. I think Flick's path to victory would be through the grappling. But like I said, Costa is not a slouch on the ground either. So it's a tough matchup for Flick, honestly. I like Costa in this fight. I don't know if he gets a finish or not, but I think money line is a good pick for him, even though it's -200 or 250 or so. I do think this is a good fight for Costa. I think it's a comeback fight for him. I think he'll be on his way to the top of the division relatively soon. Yeah, man. And then on the prelim opener, Modestus Bukauskas is fighting Zach Pauga, and I think that's a bad matchup for Zach. Modestus is faster. He hits hard, and he seems to be a lot more rejuvenated since he left the UFC and came back. And then after that, Ronnie Lawrence is fighting Dan Argueta, who's coming off The Ultimate Fighter. Ronnie Lawrence, similar to Miranda Maverick in a sense, that came in the UFC and everybody thought that they were the next big thing, kind of had a middling record after that. But I do think that Ronnie Lawrence's skill set is a nightmare for Dan Argueta. He's got great grappling, great wrestling, and I think he's going to employ that on his way to a decision victory or a late finish against Dan Argueta. But yeah, man, let's get into that betting slip, dog. What you got in this one?
All right, so my betting slip is going to look like this. I got Cannoneer, money line. I got Armand, money line. I got Dalby, money line. Lucas, money line. And Miles, money line. And I'm going to wrap that all up in a round robin.
All right, I like that. I like that. Going money line on all the picks. I'm going to go that the fight goes to the distance in the main event. I'm going to go with Armand Tsarukyan by finish. I'm going to go Armand Petrosian, money line. I'm going to do Muslim Salikov money line, Miles Johns money line, and I might sprinkle in a little Alessandro Costa and Ronnie Lawrence parlay. I think if you put them together, they're both like minus 200. You put them together, you'll get like plus 150, which is good for me. I think they'll probably get it done there. But yeah, man, it's going to be a good card. As far as an upset alert goes, I was talking about Miles Johns, but I do think Nicholas Dalby has a good chance as well. It's a very close fight, and at plus 200, I like his odds.
I'm surprised you're not going with Armand being, you know, such a big underdog on this one.
What, for who? Petrosian?
Yeah.
I mean, it's only like a plus 120, you know, so I feel like it's essentially a pick'em fight. Yeah, I do like Armand, though, in that fight. I'm taking it money line as well. But yeah, man, some good fights on this card, man. There's some good opportunities for people to come back from losses. There's some good opportunities for people to keep the ball rolling. And I'm pretty excited to see how it all shakes out, man. I think this is a sleeper card, you know. Unfortunately, it's at the Apex, so we're not going to get a crowd pop. But there's going to be some interesting matchups here, especially in that main card. I'm pretty excited for this one, man.
Hey, I'm pretty excited for us to get back on track and get back to our winning ways.
Yeah, word, dude. It's about time, you know. These kids got to eat their sushi.
Hey, we did. At least I know I did. I did good in the last like three or four. So you're gonna have a bad one every now and then. Plus,
yeah, that's
like
true.
I said, I got a little cocky, you know. I thought I was getting try to get too Mystic Mac on it, and
yeah, I agree.
It is what it is, man. You learn.
Yeah, I think I got a little excited for that last card. I tried to find value where there wasn't, you know.
No, your girl Silva, she's already out of the UFC. They dropped her immediately.
Wait, who's that?
Your girl Silva.
Oliveira. They dropped her. Oh yeah, damn!
I'm pretty sure.
You know, I was watching that fight and I thought she was doing pretty good, and then the announcers called it 30-27. I was like, huh? Like, I thought she at least won a round in there, but I mean, you know, what do I know? I'm just a fan. But yeah, dog. Let's see if we can get back to those winning ways. I mean, the last four cards were 3-1 as far as you know, winning slips go. So if you're riding with us, you're making money, especially if you're following that round robin. There's still money to be made when you're losing. Thank you so much for listening, y'all. And stay tuned for the next one. We break this down, maybe come back with a fighter retrospective or career retrospective soon. All right, y'all. Take it easy.